Coffee with Kenobi presents Resistance Reactions.
All pilots to your station.
You ready?
Let's do this.
Kasuda, good luck on tomorrow's big race.
I don't need luck. Here we go.
You can't handle the hype. Line them up.
Follow my signals.
Get ready to be impressed.
When it comes to your mission at the spot, I don't want anything to do with it.
The First Order is clearly making weapons.
We're going to need all the help we can get.
I want the station completely destroyed.
It's been too long since we've seen some action.
You showing up always means trouble.
And now, here are your hosts, Aaron Harris and David Motters.
Oh, this is exciting. I appear to be tingling all over.
Welcome back, everybody, to another review episode of Resistance Reactions. I am one half of your hosting team, Aaron Harris, and joining me is the incomparable, the incredible, and all-around great guy, Dave Motters. Dave, how you doing?
Good, buddy. I know last week it was incomparable. Now it's incredible. I was going to add stupendous on there.
Well, I was going to say incredible edible egg, but I knew that wouldn't work, so.
No, I'm doing good. Ready to fly. How you doing over there?
We're doing good, doing good. Got a little bit of a scratch in my throat, but we'll make it through with flying colors as always.
Okay.
So, how's everything on your end, my friend?
Well, good. You and I got to spend the weekend together, so I was pretty pumped. It was a real geek out weekend. Of course, we tweeted to everybody to come geek out with us, and you and I had a blast. It was a lot of fun. Perhaps the perfect size con, as you and I were talking.
Exactly. I agree. I mean, for those of you that weren't aware, David and I actually were at the first ever Central Florida Comic Con. Located in my hometown of Lakeland, Florida. So it was great to have a con in my town. Normally I have to go to Tampa or Orlando for those type of conventions. But we had it here in Lakeland, and it went really well. I had a lot of fun. It was great hanging out with you all weekend, and great seeing seeing people, talking to people, and attending some panels. So we had an overall great time. It was well put together, well organized. There were a lot of vendors, I tell you, it was, you know, we've been to Celebration. Celebration is unmatched.
Oh yeah,
I'll tell you this: Celebration is an experience of its own. It is unmatched in any type of con you'll ever do. Just the atmosphere, the people, the excitement, the energy level. It's second to none. And I've been to other cons like MegaCon. I went to another convention Fanboy Expo, and we all good cons. But this one was just fun. There's just no ands, ifs, whats, buts about it. It was well organized. The people were incredibly awesome and very nice. Everybody we talked to was great. It was a lot of fun. I know we got to attend a couple panels. I'll go ahead and get my Star Trek reference in for the episode. The first panel we sat through was for Marina Sirtis, who played Counselor Troi on Star Trek The Next Generation. She was in my hometown, which was absolutely awesome. She's absolutely hilarious, and had a great time there at that panel. But I think that the best one was actually, and correct me if I'm wrong, David, was Phil Lamar was there, and his panel was just great. What did you think of his panel?
Oh, I loved it. I was hoping I knew you were going to do the Star Trek reference of the episode was going to be her. I knew it. I knew it.
It was set up for me. I couldn't do it any other way.
I know. She was great. You know, she didn't have a moderator there at all. She's so polished. She's done it so many times. You know, I know you wanted me to comment on Phil Lamar, but I just wanted to say about her that, you know, she didn't want anybody recording it, you know. So that she could be more candid, and she was, I thought. I liked hearing the stories. I asked her a question. You and I were sitting there, and I asked her about what kind of pranks the cast pulled. And she said, because, you know, I asked her that question because she said they had so much fun on the set over, what, 7 seasons, right?
Yep.
And she said, well, it wasn't so much pranks. It was just they would laugh all the time. And I thought that was great. And so it was fun to talk to her a bit there. And then, of course, with Phil LaMarr, you know, you and I talked about that. We got our picture with him. You got him to sign a Bail Organa picture. I had him sign a Kit Fisto picture. When we met him, you know, for the autograph and picture, he was very nice and took his time talking to us. And then at the panel, it was great. You know, he tried to, over the course of his panel, do the majority of voices, like Samurai Jack, Static, I think, from the, what, Justice League, I think?
Yeah.
Is that, or Young Justice? You got to forgive me. He did, what else did he do? Well, he did
Hermes from Futurama.
Hermes from Futurama. He did Bail Organa for us.
Kit Fisto.
That's right. Because I asked him two questions, one at the beginning of the panel and one at the end. And the one at the end was about Kit Fisto and did he have much creative influence or was it primarily Dave Filoni? And he said, well, you know, consistent with what he talked about with James Arnold Taylor on his Clone Wars conversations, it was primarily George. George had called Dave and said, hey, I very much want an island type of sound from, I guess, the Nautilans and stuff like that. So, so that was neat to be able to, you know, that was, I mean, you and I were sitting right there, you know, just right there. I mean, he's just 1-2 feet away from us, you know, talking. So in terms of a panel, Marina Sirtis was 2 feet from us, right, buddy? I mean, and so was Phil LaMarr. I mean, we're just sitting there and they're looking at us and we're asking questions. And that's why, like you said, I completely agree. There's nothing like Celebration. Nothing can compare. At the same time, I love a con this size to be able to do what we did there. And literally when we were done with those panels, you and I immediately went back over to the show floor and walked around. And you and I talked to the comic book vendors. I asked them a million questions. We got invited to more cons.
Yeah, we sure did.
In the process, they these other vendors want us back for other ones in Daytona and Orlando and Tampa and all that stuff. So, so it was just really fun. And of course, maybe the most fun I had maybe was when you and I went over to the 501st and was just talking to the Tampa Bay squad of the 501st. And I was asking them all kinds of trivia questions that I didn't know about the 501st, and that was great. And then, of course, you and I got our pictures with Chopper and Vader. And then the second day, we got our picture with C-3PO and R2.
I don't know. That was amazing. That's the first time I've ever been somewhere where they've actually had a 3PO.
Well, and I had to, you know what I did, Aaron, because I'd asked you to send me that picture, and because I was going to show my kids, and I wanted the listeners to know this, that if you look at that, you might think, oh, it's kind of static, but there's a person inside of that outfit, which was so cool, and he could move his head a bit, and move around. It was so cool, because I agree with you. I'm not used to seeing that. I mean, you and I have been at Star Wars Weekends where they have somebody inside of this brilliant-looking C-3PO, but nothing like at a con like that, I don't think. So it was really, really cool talking to all the members of the 501st there. And had R2 builders were there, too.
Yep.
And then just all the art. And you and I got Star Wars comics and stuff on Rebels. And, you know, just a great time. Autographs, pictures, comics, panels, incredible.
Yeah. Incredible. Yeah, it was an incredible con. We had a blast. It was just a lot of fun. I mean, we had a night. There was a very small, very intimate panel with Butch Patrick, who was the little boy on the Munsters. If you remember the old Munsters TV show, it was a very small group of people there, very intimate, and it was a very candid conversation, which was a lot of fun. Which was great. And then you brought up the autograph meeting with Phil LaMarr, which was great. What little fun story about that is we got there, we went in, we got in line, we pick out our photos, and like you said Dave, I picked out the Bail Organa and you picked out Kit Fisto, and of course your Kit Fisto photo is like bright green and everything, and the Bail Organa one is darker and it's got a lot of blue in it. And first thing Phil Lamar noticed when he took the pictures and started looking at them was the blue pitcher belonged to the guy in the blue shirt and the green pitcher belonged to the guy in the green shirt.
Yeah, he's picking up on this immediately, yeah.
I didn't even catch that till he pointed it out.
I told you if you would have picked Kit Fisto, I would have picked Bail Organa. When you picked Bail, I said, I'm going with Kit. He didn't have one for Ornfree Ta, but he had, of course, Samurai Jack photos there. He had Hermes. He had a Static. He had, I'm trying to think of some
Pulp
of the
Fiction.
He had a Pulp Fiction shot. Yeah.
Because he was in that, yeah. So it was a great con, you know. Hats off to Ben Penrod who organized it. Thank you so much for the passes and letting us come. We had a great time, and hopefully we will get to do this all again next year.
Yeah, and I want to say this. Yeah, absolutely. Ben was incredible. With the press passes, he was so nice. He set up a great con, and Phil Lamar says that he's tried to do each con that Ben has done, Awesome Con in D.C. and stuff. So I think he really has a fondness for Ben as well. So I know that guy will set up more cons, and I hope we can do it again. And I think it was so special for me because it was just so nice to be able to talk with you, not just, recording a podcast, but you and I could update so much on so much Star Wars stuff because I had so many more questions and fun topics to talk about with you than we can record. Mm-hmm. And so I just, it was such a joy to be able to sit and talk with you and be in panels and, look at thousands of comics and just cool Star Wars art. And that was just a joy. So, yes, I hope we can do it again next year. I hope that Ben brings it back and we'll have a blast again with that.
Oh, absolutely. And, one other thing I forgot to mention, too, the art. We had there's some beautiful pieces out there. There are some pieces I looked at and I just couldn't help but get a good laugh out of. There was a lot of Ian Malcolm from Jurassic Park with his shirt ripped open, just kind of lying there. But we went to one table and met an artist named Joe Pinto, who was absolutely awesome guy. We stood there and talked for a half hour with Joe.
I think it's John. I think it's John Pinto. He is.
Yeah, excellent. You're right. I'm sorry, John, not Joe.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you brought this up.
And he was a great guy, a lot of fun. And John was great, and I wound up getting two prints from him, which I just couldn't pass up. I saw one and I absolutely loved it. I was like, I want to, but I don't. I shouldn't do it. It was a super. It was the 1978 Superman the movie. It was a print, tribute to that, which was absolutely gorgeous. Christopher Reeve on it. It's got all the stars lining the side and beautiful, beautiful post print. It was great. And I'm like, I love that movie. It's one of my favorites. And I'm like, I got to get it, but I don't want to spend the extra money right now. I shouldn't. My wife will kill me. And then after talking to John for a little bit, he's like, well, I got an Obi-Wan Kenobi print.
Oh, yeah.
And at that point, I just threw my wallet at him.
Oh my gosh! And let me say this: I have to admit to you, I think I'm going to go to his website, because I told you, Aaron, the 1978 Superman with Christopher Reeve, one of my all-time favorites, and that Obi-Wan print you have. I don't know if he would like it. I probably would because it would be advertising for him. We'd never met him before, but what a nice guy! If you put those up, because the words on your Obi-Wan, quoting Alec Guinness, oh my gosh, it's just gorgeous. And it's not just those two. He had Indiana Jones, he had Batman 1989, mm-hmm. He had, oh my gosh, all these different pop culture things, and the guy is so talented, but just a nice guy. And again, a behind the scenes talk with him about art and licensing and stuff. But I, at the very least, I think I got to get that Obi-Wan print. I got to do it, buddy.
Well, it's gorgeous. And I'll post pictures. I posted. I don't think I've posted. I haven't posted that picture yet. I took the photos and haven't posted them yet. I'll have to do that as soon as we're done recording. We got the picture. It's absolutely gorgeous. It's got Ewan McGregor's Obi-Wan dead center of the print. And just above his right shoulder is Anakin Skywalker slash Darth Vader. Obi-Wan's saber is lit, and on one side of his saber is Anakin, Hayden Christensen's Anakin, and on the other side of the saber is Vader. Then over his left shoulder, Ewan McGregor's left shoulder, is Darth Maul.
Yes.
Then at the bottom of the print, it's got Alec Guinness's Obi-Wan, and Luke Skywalker there on Tatooine, just looking at the twin sons at that one scene in The New Hope. And as you said, it's got that awesome saying of Alec Guinness describing the Jedi Knights to Luke: for over 1,000 generations, the Jedi Knights were guardians of peace and justice in the Old Republic, before the dark times, before the Empire.
Oh, it's gorgeous print. Yeah, and the whole part of before the Empire, he drops that down and kind of separates a little bit, and just it's almost like the print is speaking the words, you know, kind of emphasizing that, and it's just gorgeous. But
and it goes right along with the movie, because Alec Guinness hesitates before he says before the Empire, before the dark times, before the Empire.
Oh, it's people have got to see it. Definitely put them up, and I think people will see why you and I are gushing over this. It's all his stuff. There's a bunch of prints I wanted. I mean, I could just take all my money, and they are the perfect size, kind of like mini posters. Right? Don't you feel like that? You feel like that, or do you feel
They were perfect. I absolutely love how big they were. I mean, they're not that big at all, but they're perfect for if you don't have a lot of room, a small poster. I mean, very nice print.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Then, of course, like you said, we picked up some comics. Got the DJ Most Wanted one shot.
Yeah.
Then, of course, Tales from Vader's Castle from Star Wars Adventure number 5. Then I got the Star Wars Adventures number 7, featuring Kanan and Ezra on the cover from Star Wars Rebels. Then, of course, Poe Dameron number 25. So we got had a great haul from the show. So I was very excited.
Yeah, the cost of all those, it was incredible what we got those for. I didn't get the Poe Dameron number 25. You had found it, and but you and I were talking about having some fun with the Rebels story that is there in Star Wars Adventures. I did read it, and where it ends, and I very much want to get number 8 and see where it progresses with our heroes from Star Wars Rebels and Hondo and Naka.
Hondo!
Yes, we can always say Hondo. And so it was, I mean, like I said, just a great con, and kind of really, you know, got a little bit of everything. And you and I were even looking at some really cool old Star Wars posters and toys. You know, you and I saw the 3 original Burger King posters by Coca-Cola. Those were incredible. A guy had that.
From Empire Strikes Back?
Yeah.
I didn't even know those existed till we saw them.
Well, those 3 posters, 1980, yes, and then the 3 Burger King posters that I can barely remember as a kid. And then you and I at the other end of the con, more near the autograph section, there was a guy down there, and you and I, of course, you went through all those figures, and we both went through all the action figures. But that section, that guy had a lot of. He had an original Ralph McQuarrie, right? It was signed by McQuarrie, and some other really neat older Star Wars stuff, and that was fun to see that. And oh my gosh, talk about two kids in a candy store, man. So fun. It was good. I mean, not only good, it was great. It was a great time. It was a great time with you, buddy, and I'm so glad we did it.
Oh, I am too, and definitely a great day, great weekend. And if you missed out, definitely if you are in the Central Florida area when it comes back around next year, definitely I recommend checking it out, because it was just a lot of fun, and definitely we are planning to be there next year. So we hopefully will see everybody there. Of course, with that, I say we got a TV show we need to review. What do you think, Dave?
Oh, definitely, definitely, man. This is, we'll get into it.
All right. We are going to go ahead and start our review of Star Wars Resistance. All right, Star Wars Resistance, the episode we're reviewing today is called Dangerous Business, aired January 20th, 2019, this past Sunday. Now, what's ironic is this was released while we were at the con, at Central Florida Comic Con, and we had planned on watching it together there at the con and doing a quick recording there and just basically our initial reactions and all that, but we couldn't get the Disney app to work on my phone, on your phone. We couldn't get Disney Now to work at all, so apparently it just was not in the cards for it to happen. But you know, it is what it is. So but we got a great episode here and we're going to go through that today. Dangerous Business. The episode aired, like I said, January 20th. It was written by Eugene Sun. Great episode. This was a lot of fun episode. We have Kaz, of course, who cut a deal with Flix and Orca for some parts for the Fireball, too. And in return, he is watching the acquisition store while Flix, Orca, and their pit droid, GN8. Was it GN8 or GN9? GL. My mind just went blank. GLN went out on a quick day trip. They were going to visit Flix's mother, which I can only imagine how interesting that would have been. And in return, Kaz is watching the store for him while they're gone. Him and BB-8. Also, chaos ensues as a gentleman named Terach Key shows up looking for a certain part, which they have, but it's in this mysterious back room Kaz was told not to go into, and it's flagged as being sold to another company. Well, Terach Key winds up stealing it from acquisitions, getting it on board his ship and flying away with it while Kaz tries to get it back, discovers Terach Key is working with the First Order, and instead of recovering the part, which is a very expensive and very rare phase connector, Kaz winds up destroying Terach Key's ship and escaping in an escape pod. And to Flix and Orca's dismay, the shop's in disarray. They've lost their part, but they're grateful the part didn't go to anybody else. And Kaz has to help them clean up and fix up. So, Dave, what are your initial thoughts on this episode?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I noticed in watching it was just the number of times I was thinking about other Star Wars movies. For example, with Terach Key, right? You know, he comes in, and just the way he was speaking and talking, I very much thought about Pong Krell in The Clone Wars. Just the way he looked, the way he acted. But to forgive the play on words, a lower key, right? Terach Key. A lower key Pong Krell, not as mean or bad as I know, it's just horrible. People are just groaning at this. The next one, when Kaz is in the container and he has his little communicator, I'm thinking about Luke in the trash compactor. A little bit of a different scenario, but again, he's holding it up and he's trying to, you know, get rescued. And then Bitey. We have a quirk that is named, and Bitey, what a perfect name. He totally reminded me of Return of the Jedi, where it's that nature, you know, Ewoks, nature over the big industrialized war machine. And just watching him bite on the electronics, and the electrical bolts are going through his teeth and his eyes, and he's just loving it. And he bites back down on him again. I absolutely thought about Ewoks during that scene, because literally you're seeing that big ship of Terach Key go down into the water there on Castellan, and I just visualize, you know, the two big pieces of lumber coming in and smashing the AT-ST in Return of the Jedi. So you know, a lot of reminders. It felt like homages to other movies, and of course the Clone Wars. In terms of moving the plot forward, these phase connectors, this is interesting. They crack open asteroids and or small planetoids for mining. I really like Kaz's question. Are they using it to get more deadlinite or something else? And so, you know, I have some ideas about that in my final thoughts, but I thought I'll just leave it with those two initial thoughts. A lot of fun reminders of other Star Wars stuff, and I'm very interested in where they're pushing this story to. I'm excited about it.
Oh, absolutely. It was a I thought it was just a good, fun episode myself. Very interesting with the Tarok Key. You mentioned him looking like a little like Krell. Which you know, he looked a lot when you mentioned it. I was kind of sitting there thinking, like, he does look a lot like him without the extra arms.
Exactly. Size of a mouth, a head. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just he just has that look about him, which was pretty cool. And now you mention it, I'm thinking that connection. I'm thinking, yeah, there you go. And he's working for the bad guy, so you know it fits. So, but it was a great episode. I loved Bitey. Bitey was all over the place in this episode. He was he really made Bitey. Of course, for those of you who y'all trying to figure out who Bitey is. Bitey, of course, is, if you have not seen the episode, I don't know why you're listening yet, but Bitey, of course, is Flix and Orca's pet Gorg. Now I understand why they picked Kaz to watch the store rather than Niku, because Niku would have eaten the Gorg.
Exactly.
So, but he's their pet, and he's absolutely hysterically, like, don't wiggle your fingers in front of his face, he'll think it's food. And you know, it happened more than once. And I loved how at the end of it, at the end of the episode, when they're trying to escape the crashing ship, to get him to try to follow him, he's waving his fingers in front of his face because Kaz is like, come on buddy, let's go, and he's just wanting him to bite on so he could get him out of there,
right?
A lot of good laughs in this. Great episode. So, a lot of fun. Let's jump into it. I mean, the first thing I want to jump into is, of course, Kaz. When we open the episode, when the episode opens up, we have Kaz in Yeager's hangar. It opens up with Yeager, Tam, and Niku approaching the fireball, and they're discussing this huge list of repairs they have. Tam is beyond frustrated that every time Kaz takes the fireball out, it comes back broken, and now they got to do all these repairs to it, and she wanted to take it out flying. And as they get close, they realize that all the repairs that they were needing to do are already checked off as completed. And next thing you know, Kaz pops up from behind the fireball. He's like, I got it for you, Tam. It's all done. Yeah, it's all done. And I know you wanted to take her out flying, so I wanted to make sure she was all ready for you. I just got this one part, and he pops the last part in. And they were all very impressed by his repair skills. Even Niku's like, wow, Kaz, your repair skills have gotten really good. And, of course, Tam's like, yeah, they have. But if you don't want to drain all the power, you need to put that piece in the right way. So he's not perfect yet, but he's obviously improving in his skills, and it's being recognized by everybody. Definitely, it's a change in the character from what we had seen so far. What did you think of that opening with Kaz repairing the fireball and the reactions of his teammates?
Well, that's, yeah, you know, you and I are always looking for, you know, character arcs and development. And in fact, I have that written down as one of my final thoughts, is just about Kaz becoming more adept. Like you said, it did a very good job, really surprised Yeager and Tam and even Niku, right? Still, like you said, not perfect, put a part in wrong. But, you know, that's what I think of, becoming more adept, becoming more mature. Excuse me. And that's what we're going to want to see over the remainder of this season and next season. And that's the growth we like to see in any of these characters. So I really liked how they started this episode with him you know, working better on that, on the fireball.
No, absolutely. I completely agree. And I want to keep digging into Kaz and his growth. But real quick, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back to continue discussing Dangerous Business. All right, welcome back, everybody. Aaron and David here, and we're continuing our discussion here on Dangerous Business. And we went before a break. Dave was making the point as we were discussing Kaz's character growth through the beginning of the that was demonstrated by the beginning of the episode when he's exercising his and showing us his repair skills on the fireball, taking everybody off guard. And he didn't do it perfect, but it definitely showed a level of maturity and growth in him. And we see that demonstrated further throughout the episode, because toward the end of the episode, when he is trying to recover the phase connector, he's on board the Terra Keys ship, which is also being guarded by First Order stormtroopers. And we see him go into spy skills. So he was being quiet, climbing over things, snooping around, and which we've seen him do in the past, but never as successful as he has done here. He managed not to get seen, not to get spotted, and it was incredible work that he did. But what'd you think of his spy skills being put to the test on Taraki's ship?
I know, you know, this is what, again, why, you know, there's many reasons I enjoy doing this show, but I love the insights that you have, and I always hope I have some insights that you enjoy and the listeners enjoy. And that's one that I really think about as you were talking. I'm just visualizing the episode in my mind's eye, and he really does, you know, sneak around really well, doesn't get seen. It's good to see that. It you know, again, you and I have said this from the very first episode, is that these episodes are trying to entertain young children, and so there is that slapstick, but I noticed there was a bit less of it. I mean, like you said, he does flap his hands, he gets Bitey to bite his hand, and then he does go, and they don't see him there. I mean, ultimately, I think they see Bitey, because obviously Terra's key shoots at Bitey, but it was good to see the growth there. Again, working as a mechanic, pilot, and then as a spy. And so, again, really good growth. Again, I don't know that the kids are going to notice that, but again, I think Justin Ridge and the producers are trying to slide some of this stuff in there for us to enjoy.
Oh, absolutely. And the growth I felt was great, because he did, not only was he successfully not seen, he successfully used the tools at his fingertips to make his mission a success. In this case, no pun intended, the weapon at his fingertips was Bitey. Got Bitey to bite down on the power cells and break down the power so that the ship would go down. And very successfully did so. And, you know, and he tried to rescue Bitey, and Bitey just wouldn't come, and they wound up, unfortunately, he wound up ejecting in the escape pod without Bitey, and he actually was feeling really bad that he lost Bitey. You know, it was a very somber moment as he's sitting there in the escape pod as the ship's going down. He's like, oh, poor Bitey, he was a good Bitey. And next you know, you see Bitey crawl across the window of the escape pod, just almost like Stitch does in Lilo and Stitch. And
right.
He just kind of crawls up and is kind of hanging on there, and he's like, Bitey! and it worked out great. It was a lot of fun seeing him in that growth, and see him mourn Bitey, who honestly had been almost an antagonist for him throughout the whole episode.
Could you imagine, Aaron, if Flix and Orca come back, your shop is destroyed, the phase connector is destroyed, and Bitey's dead. Could you imagine? Oh my gosh. Oh,
that would have been, hold me back, Flix, hold me back.
Exactly. Orca would have been, yes, exactly, saying that very thing. Yes, Bobby Moynihan as Orca would be saying
that. Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, it was great. And you mentioned, of course, the shop being destroyed. Kaz had nothing to do with the shop being destroyed. That was actually BB-8 who destroyed Flix and Orca's shop. And, of course, he did that while trying to defend the shop from Tarok Key, who is there to steal the phase connector. After he locks Kaz in the container, he goes in to try to find it. And, of course, BB-8 gives him what for, and he's literally throwing parts at him, trying to get him to stop, and hits him a few times, and it was really good. Put up a good fight till he got the shelf pushed over onto him and wound up being trapped for pretty much the rest of the episode. BB-8 was trapped underneath that bookcase. How'd you feel BB-8 did defending the acquisition store?
Oh, great. I mean, it is fun. I love whenever he gets that thing out and starts shocking people. I think back to Finn getting shocked in The Force Awakens. BB-8's pretty sharp. You know, the other thing that was so neat was seeing him swing, you know, and swing right at Taraj Ki and with his whole body. And then, you know, the thing that you know, he's got those three cables that go out, right? He did it in the Millennium Falcon to, like, stabilize himself as the Millennium Falcon was flying around. He has one of those shoot out, bam, and hit Taraj Ki right in the face, and I thought that was so cool. I didn't want him to get caught, but, you know, or trapped in there, but other than that, I'm really enjoying BB-8 in this series, and him, you know, I know he's, you know, posed droid. I feel like it's not just BB-8, but I feel like it's Poe's influence through BB-8 to Kaz as well for that growth. So, you know, and to see a familiar droid from the movies, I just really like it. So, I love BB-8 anyways, but I just really love him in this show.
I agree. BB-8 has played a big part. He's been very well fleshed out as a character. But since we're talking BB-8, let's go ahead and go down this road. BB-8 versus Bucket. You know, Bucket was sold as the droid for Team Fireball. We hardly see Bucket. We don't see him do any of this stuff. We've seen more action from Bucket in the few shorts during the mid-season break than we have really in the regular episodes. How do you feel about Bucket and the way he's being utilized so far compared to BB-8?
Yeah, you know, it's not much. You know what you made me think about is back when, you know, Dave Filoni was developing Rebels, and he said, you know, you just don't want to have some of these legacy characters come in and dominate. You want them to breathe and develop themselves. I do think that's part of the process of what's happening here with BB-8 there. You know, I thought about, you know, getting him, you know, be down there with you at the con this past weekend. And what was really cool is you showed me all of the Resistance action figures. And I was thinking to myself, you know, when you showed me Bucket and how he's got the retractable leg, I thought, you know, this guy is so cool. I felt like I saw more action there with, you know, you and I just having the action figures than I'm seeing Bucket on the screen. So, you know, you and I love Chopper. He was able to develop. Obviously, what? We had C-3PO and R2 in the very first episode of Rebels, but it wasn't those two dominating. They let Chopper develop his whole personality, you know. I would think they would do that. I'm not sure, though. I don't know. It'd be nice to see more of them.
Oh, I completely agree. And this is, you know, I absolutely love this show. The Resistance definitely has struck a chord with me, and I really like the show. I really love it. But this is my only problem with the series, is the lack of attention for Bucket. You know, with you brought up R2 and 3PO in Rebels. I mean, they like you said, Filoni specifically said he didn't want all these legacy characters to detract from the new characters being developed and being produced. And even though in the very first, not the pilot, but they're not Spark right. Rebellion, the very first episode after that, we had, I'm trying to remember the name of that episode.
It's called Droids in Distress.
Droids in Distress, that's it. Droids in Distress, we have R2 and 3PO make a cameo in the episode. And I remember when that first came out, I was like, oh man, that's kind of, it's great to see them, but really, do we need this kind of star power this early to carry the episode? And the episode worked. I mean, right. I mean, I love how they developed almost a rivalry between Chopper and R2. And that's what made it work. But then they disappeared.
Right.
They were gone. We didn't see them again. I think we saw R2 later in a season or two later, toward the end, but they were done. We didn't see them, R2 or 3PO again, for a long time. And, you know, when they said BB-8 was going to be in this, I'm like, okay, yeah, that's cool. They'll do like they did with, Rebels. They'll have Bucket in there, and then they'll bring in BB-8, then he'll leave, and then he'll come back with Poe, and then he'll leave, and then he'll come back with Poe, and then he'll leave, and he'll just be popping in and out like Poe will be doing. I never, in my wildest dreams, thought they were going to leave BB-8 on the Colossus with Cass.
Well, well, you're hitting it, and I've heard, you and I have talked about this, about what some other Star Wars fans have been saying is they were really surprised, you know, how long BB-8 is away from Poe, and I agree with that, and that's where you can have him go back with Poe. He's his droid, and he needs to be in an X-Wing fighter helping Poe, and that's where we could have Bucket, you know, helping Kaz.
Oh, I absolutely agree. I mean, BB-8 has, even throughout the movies, was sold as Poe's droid. I mean, that's all he wanted. He's at Force Awakens. He's escaping at the beginning. He tells BB-8, here's a piece of the map. I will find you. He escapes the Star Destroyer. We gotta go to Jakku. I gotta find my droid. Then when he gets back to the Resistance base, he comes calling out his X-Wing. BB-8 goes running up to him as fast as his little ball can spin, and what? Gets there, and he's like, BB-8! And he gives him a hug, and he's talking to him, and
well, in The Last Jedi, I was just watching that the other day.
Yeah.
I think, you know, before I saw you, before I came down to Lakeland, I was watching The Last Jedi. I kind of split it up into two halves, and when Rose and
when they crash on Crate.
Yeah, they crash on Crate.
Finn, where's my droid?
You know, and he starts rubbing BB-8's belly like you would like a cat or a dog.
Yeah, exactly.
So yes, definitely his droid.
So it begs me to, why is he still there if that's Poe's baby? You know, it just doesn't make sense to me why, don't get me wrong, I love how they've used him. I've loved his story arcs. I've loved how he's helped out. He's had some good interactions. But at the same point, there's nothing he could have done that Bucket couldn't have done.
Yeah, and I do think about the initial advertising we saw for the Resistance. It had BB-8 in it, you know.
Exactly.
And I think it's because of the star power, and I do think of viewers, like kids saying, oh, why should I watch it? Oh, BB-8's in it. And so kind of would like it now where, like you said, where you kind of phase them out and have them fall in love with Bucket.
Oh, no, exactly. I mean, that's what needs to be done. I mean, the success of the show, you know, can't be driven by the fact that you're going to keep BB-8 in it. They have done some excellent job developing some excellent characters, Kaz and even Sonara,
Yeager and Tam,
and I'm sitting here looking at her. I can't think of her. Tora Dosa. I'm sitting here looking at her figure, and I'm like, I can't think of her name right now. But yeah, Tora. They've developed all these characters very well. But they've left Bucket in the cold.
He is. He just, he's sad looking, and now it's even sad how they're treating him.
Yeah, so definitely I'd like to see more of Bucket. Bucket was not in this episode. He wasn't. There was no Bucket in this episode.
Not even a clip. I was trying to remember in my mind. Yeah,
no,
okay.
He was nowhere in this episode. So no Bucket. So definitely that's something I'd like to see changed going forward. And I'll get off my soapbox there and continue on with the love for the show. Now, you mentioned during your opening remarks about the phase connector and how it was described, how it was being used, or what they're used for, with drilling and mining. And of course, we know from Station Theta Black, the First Order is doing a lot of mining and drilling, and what could they possibly need it for, of course, after finding out that Tarok Key works for the First Order. Or are they trying to set up another mind? Or could they possibly? We know by this point, we've seen it in the previous episodes. We know Starkiller Base is built, so seriously doubt they would need to do any mining for Starkiller Base.
Well, you wonder if, you know, like it was previously a planet. You know, I don't know. Do they need phase connectors to open up the ground and build it in there? Maybe not. The thing I was wondering, you know, when they mentioned asteroids or small planetoids, if they had enough phase connectors, can they, you know, like you think about how Starkiller Base works, right, by sucking the energy out of a star. And I don't know, just in my head, I wonder if they would use it for, like, to, you crack it open to have the energy start flowing out of the star. Do you just pull it off of the outer part of a star? I don't know. These are all the thoughts in my head on how they would use something like that. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
You know, you were sitting there talking, and it just literally hit me like a ton of bricks. You know, they mentioned that phase connector be used to crack open a small moon or an asteroid or something like that. At the end of The Last Jedi, they used the, quote, what, Finn describes as the Death Star tech to crack open the door of the base on Crait. Could they have possibly been trying to build one of those and need the phase connector for that?
I
can't think of what it's called. I want to call it a battering ram, but I know that's not it. But
you're saying, I could look at my Last Jedi visual dictionary, but that could be it. They want more of them to have more of those type of, you know, Death Star techie, you know, battering rams or whatever. Like what did Finn say? They'll crack that door open like an egg. You know,
exactly.
You know,
which based on the description of the phase connector by Flix, that's exactly what it would do.
Yeah.
So I mean, that could be something they need for that particular style battering ram / battering laser, whatever it is.
Right, and they would like to have those not just there on Crait, but any site they need to go to get at enemies. Protective doors or whatever. Here you go, and they're ready to attack the First Order. No, that's a good call, brother. That's a good call right there.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, thank you. I mean, it literally was something I had just thought of while you were talking, and it definitely fits it fits the description. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
All right. So moving on from the phase connector, we'll wrap things up, of course, with Flix and Orca. Flix and Orca, I tell you, these are probably two of the funniest characters on the show. They every time they're on screen, it's a laugh. They leave you in stitches. When they're giving Kaz the instructions, when the customer comes in, take their money. If the customer's always right, take their money. If the customer wants this, take their money. If the customer wants this and we don't have it, take their money. I mean, it just everything was take their money. I mean, yeah, it was hilarious to hear them give them the instructions. Don't go through the back. Don't you enter the back room. No way, no how, no sir. Orca, to me, in that scene when he was telling Kaz not to go in that back room, reminded me of the doorman from Wizard of Oz. No way, no how, no sir.
Yes, yes. You know, probably an homage to that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised. You know, we know Star Wars creators really know their movie history. But these two characters, I've enjoyed them and learning about them from even before the first episode aired back in October. I just really, you know, I just really like both of the voice actors too, you know, because I've seen them in other things, and so that really helps too. But how they play off of each other, and you know, Flix is, you know, got this little cutting attitude, you know, cutting personality that just strikes me as funny, and Orca as well. It's just, they play off each other great, and you know. I, like I said in a previous episode, I really think we're going to see them play, you know, I don't know, I think some really critical roles here in terms of, you know, parts and, you know, just kind of coming through when, you know, push comes to shove and when the pilots have to get through something by the skin of their teeth. I think we're going to see Flix and Orca there, you know, helping them, and I look forward to that. I hope that's the case, and but they're perfect in this show. They're perfect comedy relief.
Oh yeah, I mean, they are perfect comedy relief, and they're just a lot of fun. You know, they're different. They're different aliens to what we've seen before, and they just have this aura around them that makes them fun to deal with. So I thoroughly enjoyed it all over. So. Oh, so of course, with that, of course, we will wrap up our discussion of Dangerous Business. Dave, what are your closing and final thoughts on this episode?
Oh, definitely. The first one I have is consistent with what we talked about at the beginning, is that, you know, I felt there was a bigger jump forward here in terms of the First Order, the hints of Starkiller Base, obviously other tech. In the last episode, Bebo, there are things that you and I pointed out that were very subtle in terms of moving it forward. These were more overt, you know, seeing First Order troopers, you know, on Taraj Key's ship, them wanting this phase a connector and stuff like that. I really liked that. I liked the movement forward, and it started to feel more like the mid-season trailer that we saw. And I'm excited for these episodes to finish the season, and I really want this to amp up. The second one is going back to what we said about Kaz becoming more adept on fixing things. He's not perfect, but we see the character growth. He's becoming more mature, and you know, and he's in there, you know, fixing the fireball and doing work on it. Without anyone telling him to do that. So I thought that was really neat. And then my third final thought is what you said, and it's definitely more Bucket. We need more Bucket. So that's just a final thought. I know that, you know, I'm a positive person. I'm pretty excited about stuff, and I'm not, you know, suspension of disbelief. You know, I'm right there in a movie, and I just enjoy it and stuff like that. But you and I can, you know, talk about things that we don't like, and that's okay as well. And I agree with you. I'd like to see more buckets. So that's my third point in terms of final thoughts. But overall, really enjoyed this.
Perfect. I definitely agree. I really enjoyed it too. Definitely, it was nice to see Kaz. To me, the biggest part takeaway from this episode is Kaz's growth, not only as a repairman, as a mechanic, but as a spy as well. We see that come full fledged throughout this episode. It was from his moments on in Jaeger's shop repairing the fireball, to his escape from the container that's about to be dropped into the Castellan Ocean. to, of course, his bringing down of the ship. He went all James Bond on us in this episode.
That's right.
Which I thought was great. The only thing he didn't get was the girl. So, not that there was one in this episode for him to get, but it was a lot of fun. It was nice seeing him go all 007, and pull it off, with the flair that only Kaz could bring. BB-8 was funny. I got a good kick out of BB-8. Especially when he did the cord swing, reminded me very, very Indiana Jonesy.
Oh yeah,
and I got a kick out of that. And it was great seeing, of course, a plan of the First Order. Obviously, the First Order is moving ahead with their plans, and they are using whatever means necessary to get the parts that they need. I'd love to hear what the official word is of what they needed this phase connector for, and hopefully we will find out eventually. But it was a lot of fun. I thoroughly enjoyed the episode as it was, and it was good. When it comes to grading an episode, we do great episodes. If you've listened to us before, you know how this works. If you're new to Resistance Reactions, of course, each episode we will assign a grade to after we discuss it. That grade will be just like you got in school. It would either be an A, B, C, D, or F. With all the fun in the episode, of course, the comedic elements from Bitey, Kaz's growth is what really saved this episode for me, to be honest. This was just a fun episode all the way around. But if it wasn't for Kaz's growth, I probably would have a lot of griping to do about this episode. Kaz's growth is what really advanced the storyline in this episode, and I'm glad they did it. Because of how much we got to see, how much of Kaz's growth we got to see, and how much he has changed, I'm going to have to give this one a B+ when it comes to a grade. David, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I wrote mine down before we started recording. I look at previous ones, you know that. I try to keep it, you know, I try to be consistent. You know, really give B's and B+s to episodes that need it, you know, an A or A- to certain ones. You and I gave B's to Bebo, not, you know, B+ or B-. I think particularly because of that mid-season trailer and what is coming, I definitely feel it in my bones that we've got some A- and A's coming. Obviously, you and I hope through the course of this series they'll have, you know, a Twilight of the Apprentice like they had in Rebels, which was an A+ for us. But I have written down a B+ before we started recording. And, you know, same as you, we did B's last time, B+ for this. I definitely think it's better than Bebo last week. But I can definitely see some episodes coming down the pike that'll be, you know, bumping up to A- and A, and that's how I said I'm excited for those. But like I said, thoroughly enjoyed this, and I do agree with you that Kaz's character growth was key to helping this this episode.
Absolutely, and I wholeheartedly agree with that. Mm-hmm. Perfect. So, of course, with that ends our discussion of Danger. No, Dangerous Business. Yep. Dangerous Business. Right. Wow. I blanked on the name.
So many episodes at this point, honestly.
Oh, yeah. I tell you, it's been...
Well, and all the shorts, 12 of the shorts, they all have names.
Exactly. You get them all tied up and confused because we've done a lot of Resistance talking as of late. But we did get an email here I just pulled them up and looked. I'm just going to go ahead and read these emails. First one. I'm scared to read these now. All right, here we go. Okay, David and Aaron, I, Corporal Flux, am back to grace your presence. In my last email, you two Resistance sympathizers, I mentioned my dissatisfaction with Captain Phasma and Major Von Wreck in Station Theta Black. Well, I'm even less impressed with Phasma and Pyre for using Tarok Key on such an important mission. Idiots, I say. I will deal with them. By the way, look and sound pretty good in the mid-season trailer. Just saying.
He sounds pretty good. He sees himself in the mid-season trailer.
Apparently,
yes.
He does see himself in the mid-season trailer.
Yes. So,
all right. So, and the next one, of course, I'm sure you can guess. It is I, Willard Tarkanis. I said in my last email I would be giving Corporal Flux a history lesson. Well, apparently, he doesn't listen, because his underlings, Phasma and Pyre, hired some goon called Tarak Key to steal a phase connector. My, oh my. He needs to learn from me. I had Krennic do all the legwork for the Death Star before taking over that project and taking all the credit. He has a lot to learn. Tarkanis out.
Whoa, thrown darts, both of them. Woo.
You know, and only thing I have to say about this,
what?
I'm glad they didn't listen to the last episode, or else that would have heard nothing but Osnian Prime.
I know. Oh my gosh. Well, you and I caught a break last episode that they didn't write in. They're pretty, you know, but that, you could tell they were chomping at the bit to get back in and criticize each other, criticize their underlings, and all that kind of stuff. But I got a feeling these two hoodlums are going to keep emailing in. That's why I said, I tweeted out, I said, hey, we got to get some other people tweeting in to, you know, not let these two guys dominate the show. But they're ready to rock and roll every week, I know.
Oh, they were. And it's fun to have them right in. They usually are worth a good laugh. So, yeah. So with that, that ends Dangerous Business. David.
What about Creature?
That's where we are going now.
Okay.
We have
This
week's Dave's Creature Corner.
No, this is perfect. This is perfect. You know, we didn't have any in Station Theta Black. You and I talked about that. We had a little bit in Bebo, right? We had Bebo himself, Baby Rachna, and we found out what the flying birds were. They're Spiegels, right? But in this one, it was interesting. We found out that Taraj Key is a Keterian, K-E-T-E-E-R-I-A-N, same as what character? Oh, one in The Last Jedi. We see him very quickly in the Canto Bight Casino. That's Tarib Igmusk. He's a hotel concierge in The Last Jedi. So there he is, a Keterian alien from the casino. So we see him now officially, that species in Resistance. Now, here's the next one. In Bucket's List, you know, you and I always look at Bucket's List, comes out on Mondays. Then there were six of them. That's kind of short. Usually they have nine or ten, but they had six. And the last one is called Inspired by the Master. And it said that Flix is based off of Ralph McQuarrie, the master, obviously, art for Ewoks. And some of the sketches it said ended up becoming Yuzum, Y-U-Z-Z-U-M. And it said the more bird-like sketches were used as inspiration for Flix, but it didn't say definitively that Flix was, say, Yuzum. So I tweeted in to Justin Ridge, supervising director of Star Wars Resistance, and to Tracy Canobio. She posts a lot, obviously for Rebels, still does, and for Resistance. And it was cool because yesterday she got back with me. I did it on Tuesday. She got back, or I did it on Monday, I think, and she got back with me on Tuesday. Yeah. And she said that Flix is not a Yuzum, a Y-U-Z-Z-U-M. Instead, she said Flix is a Gozo, G-O-Z-Z-O. And I thanked her so much for responding. And so I don't know. I don't know if we got a scoop there, buddy. I have not seen Flix listed. Maybe I guess I should look at the database on StarWars.com if that's already listed. But I thought that was so nice of her to respond. Thank you, Tracy Canobio of Lucasfilm. And so there we go. We got two more species. That puts us up, Aaron, to 33. Now, again, there's more than that, but we're talking named species or aliens. So there you go, buddy.
Perfect. Perfect. Great job there. Great job there. I know I look forward to our Creature Corner each week to see what you come up with. I do have a Niku saying of the week, but I was unable to get it loaded up on my iPad so we could play it. So next week we will do a double edition of Niku saying of the week. So Niku saying of the week, double header. Coming next time on Resistance Reactions. So make sure you tune in for that double header there for Resistance Reactions for Niku's saying of the week. That'll be next week. So with that, of course, David, if somebody wants to talk Resistance with you, what's the best way for them to do so?
Yeah, I think the best is definitely at Twitter, David_Motters. And, you know, obviously people can see all the tweets there that, you know, we're doing on Resistance and other Star Wars topics. I really don't talk about much anything, you know, anything else on that. No politics, really no religion, just really just a lot of Star Wars. And so that's a good place, David_Motters. And the other one is if people want to write something a bit longer in an email, it would be dmotters@coffeewithkenobi.com.
Very good, very good. And great there. Of course, if you want to talk Star Wars Resistance with me, right now my personal accounts are on sabbatical. I'm taking some time off in the new year. February 1st, I'll be back on. Of course, right now the best way to get hold of me is through Resistance Reactions. You can find us on Twitter @ResistReactions. Or, of course, you can find us on Facebook, Resistance Reactions. Or, of course, you can email the show, resistancereactions@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or you can email my personal email, aharris@coffeewithkenobi.com as well. I always do that. I don't know why.
It just comes natural.
It comes natural. Yes, it is. It is natural. You got to do the Kenobi. Anyway, with that, of course, thank you, David, for joining me again to discuss Dangerous Business. We will be back next week with our review of the next episode of Star Wars Resistance called The Doza Dilemma. We get to see what that dilemma is, of course, so make sure you subscribe to our iTunes feed or subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts, and that way you don't miss an episode. You can also check out our back catalog of shows as well. In the meantime, if you're needing your more of a Star Wars fix, check out the Coffee with Kenobi family of shows. Of course, the flagship show, Coffee with Kenobi, hosted by Dan Z. Of course, if you like your comics and you want to stay up to task with the latest in comic canon, take, of course, listen to Comics with Kenobi with Matt and Jeff. Don't forget about Legends of the Library with Randy and Luke and gang. They take a look at all of the Legends line of books, also known as the Expanded Universe. So if you like those, give them a listen and enjoy that. Then, of course, Lattes with Leia with one of our celebration hosts, Amy Ratcliffe. And, of course, Dr. Andrea Lenamendi. Of course, great, great show. A lot of great discussions. I think the latest episode, they were talking about self-care and how it plays a part in fandom and fandom's effect on people taking care of themselves, which is great. Great, great topics. Check that out. And, of course, always for the latest news, check out coffeewithkenobi.com. David, my friend, pleasure as always.
Oh, always great to be on with you, buddy.
Absolutely, and it was great seeing you this week as well. We'll have to do that again real soon. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. Remember, this is the Resistance podcast you're looking for.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
This
no one here. Move along. Move along.